know, in this modern day and age, attention spans are shorter. If we want to engage with the youth population, which is really important for tennis moving forward, we do need to look at shortening matches. I said this, you know, to Andy Murray in the locker room. I don't need to watch you play Novak Djokovic for 4.5 hours.
Right.
I'm quite happy watching you guys play for two.
Right.
For me, the drama of a Serena Williams Vinci semifinal in three sets as exciting as any five-setter that I've ever watched.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast here with my trusty producer, Jamie Lasanti. We have a return guest, Eric Buderak. But last time we spoke to him, he was merely an outstanding doubles player. I think we got him in Metz, France, where he was playing in the fall of 2015. He is now 3 days away from starting a new job, a desk job, an office job at the USTA, where he'll have a host of duties. So one of my obsession topics is the transition that athletes sometimes make well and sometimes struggle with from a sports career to a conventional career. We're going to talk to Eric about that, about some proposed rule changes, and about his new life. So let's bring him in now. I think he's in a parking lot somewhere in Connecticut. He's really living the suburban life. Eric Buderak, how are you?
John, how you doing, man?
Good. I appreciate you doing this. Everything good?
I'm doing great. I'm honored to be a second guest or a callback guest, whatever you call that, two times.
You are I think you and Chris Evert are the only people we've had twice. How's that for fast company?
Yeah, but you've had.
Oh well, Lindsay.
You've had Lindsay on a number of times. Right?
Lindsay's like our cousin Sal. Lindsay's like John Goodman hosting Saturday Night Live. Except Lindsay's Lindsay's Sunday picks.
I listen to a lot of Bill Simmons, so I'm horrible.
I think Lindsay's Sunday picks are better. That's the only difference. Where are you? Are you in an office?
I am sitting in my car outside Starbucks in Greenwich, Connecticut, my new home.
Who among us hasn't been there? Not Greenwich, but a car outside Starbucks taking a call.
Place to do a radio interview.
This is a little different from where you were and would have been a year ago.
Yes, quite differently. I think you spoke to me last year in Metz, France.
Exactly
a year ago.
Let's go Metz. Now you're hearing about the Metz on 10-10 wins. So let's start talking about that, because a year ago we spoke and you were at the end of, I think you were thinking about the next step and career 2.0 and what was coming after tennis. This, of course, is a topic that I am obsessed with, athletes making that transition. You have made the transition. I'm reading from a release I received several weeks ago. You ready? Former top 20 doubles player Eric Buderak has been named Director, Professional Tennis Operations and Player Relations, USTA, starting October 2016. We are taping this on, what's today, Jamie Lasanti, our producer?
29th.
You are, by my counts, you're about 3 days away from joining Desk Job Nation, by joining the working world. What does this job entail, and what's going to happen to your life starting October 2016?
Well, my life's going to be a lot different, but hopefully in a really good way. It officially starts on Monday. However, I've been observing the whole second week of the Open. I was in yesterday for a five-hour strategy meeting for, the future of pro tennis operations within the USTA. So I've been really involved the last few weeks, and it's been great. I guess my job description is have a strong hand in all USTA properties. I think my primary focus will be the U.S. Open, making that the best showcase for tennis that it can be. And obviously assisting a lot with player relations through my player council work. I feel like I have a good connection with everyone from the top guys like Djokovic and Federer all the way down to the working class and players like myself, and understanding what their needs are, what they're looking for from not only big events like the U.S. Open, but from things like the pro circuit, and how can we help our American players, navigate those tricky waters of the Futures and Challenger Tour, and from an operation side of things, how can I help help the organization assist these players in getting into the top 100, top 50, and beyond?
Are you going to be based mostly in White Plains, or are you going to keep an office in Florida too?
I will be in White Plains. I'm sure I will spend a fair bit of time down in Orlando once the home of American tennis gets up and running, I think January 2nd. But no, my office will be in White Plains, and I'll be based mostly in the Northeast up here.
You're a pragmatic Midwesterner, so I'm sure you have answers here. But I'm always curious. I mean, how do you pick up on office life? I mean, you've been a professional athlete, you've been traveling, you've been sort of the CEO of this one person company, and suddenly it's budget meetings and when do I speak in the meeting and who do I CC on the email? Has someone helped you prepare you for that, or is that something you're going to learn on the fly?
No one has directly prepared me for that, no. Even sitting in some of the meetings in the last week, it's been really interesting to understand the dynamics, especially with a huge organization like the USTA. You know, we have a whole new leadership group with Stacey Allister, Martin Blackman, Craig Morris, and Community Tennis. So there's some new people within the organization, but there's also a lot of people who have been there for a long time, guys with great institutional knowledge like David Brewer and Brian Early and Jeff Ryan. So it's been interesting for me to watch kind of the two different groups operate and learn a lot from both. I think there's an advantage for me to be someone coming from the outside. I don't see the organization as siloed in any way. I'm happy to help in player development or community tennis if that's what they want me to do. But also some of these guys who've been there for such a long time, they have great information for me. So part of it's just observing, sort of it's learning when I can. And it'll be a work in progress as I move into this new role.
But your first day is Monday, right?
First official day is Monday.
Tell them you're Jewish. You can have off for a few days. You can start on Wednesday.
No, honestly, after a month off away from the tour, I'm ready to get going. I don't sit still very well. It's been awesome being home all day with my kids. But I am anxious to get my hands dirty and get to work as well.
Have these rhythms been an adjustment of, you know, you're not having to worry about FaceTiming your kids, you're not having to worry about what's the time difference to Shenzhen, and did Delta get my upgrade come through? Has this been an adjustment?
You know, it's been great so far. And I tell people that, you know, to go back to Mets and Shenzhen and Tokyo for the 10th time, it wasn't the most appealing trip for me. So to be home when I see my friends playing those events, I'm very happy with where I'm at. If we have this phone call again in January when you guys are all down in Melbourne and I'm shoveling snow in Connecticut, it might be a different feeling. But right now, it's been a really great adjustment into the normal life.
You're from Minnesota. I suspect you are an expert snow shoveler. we'll have no more Mets bashing on this podcast, by the way. But but seriously, I mean, is it strange watching these results come on your phone or going online and sort of thinking to yourself, boy, a year ago I was in that draw?
It is. I had a little preview to it because our second child was born during Wimbledon, so I skipped the whole grass court season this year, which I think for me was a really healthy exercise in what life is going to be like. And that was hard. You know, I was watching teams like Klassen and Ram, who we just beat at the French Open, and they were in the semis of Wimbledon. A team like Mirny and Huey, who we beat 2 weeks earlier in Estoril, you know, they were in the semis of Wimbledon. And it was just like, wow, that could or even should be me. So that was hard. I think now, you know, I feel really comfortable with where I'm at. You know, I got a message from Julien Rojer today when he was in the airport. And Heathrow just said, hey, man, just, you know, thinking about you and wanted to say what's up. And Bruno Suarez and all these different doubles guys keep me in the loop of, you know, how their matches are going. And I feel really good about being a fan and watching those guys play. That's not my life anymore. And that's okay.
That sounds very healthy. How did you experience the U.S. Open?
How did I experience the U.S. Open this year? As a player or what?
No, this year. I mean, you know, after for the second week, you were there not just as, I mean, you weren't really there as a fan, and you weren't really there as an employee.
No.
And yet, a year from now, this will be something that you'll be taking close notes on. I mean, what was it like to sort of experience the event that you're going to be a part of shaping next year?
So you know, obviously I played it 10 times, so I had a really good handle on, you know, what it's like to be as a player. I did spend the second week doing as much observing and learning as I could. I felt like an employee, although I wasn't really doing work as I was just doing research.
Right.
And so it was great for me to really run through all the different player services organizations, things like practice courts and locker rooms and transportation and food and every little thing that the players experience, but see it from the other side and sit with these staff members and hear about their concerns and how they've been running things and actually watch them do their job from behind the desk. And I think that gave me a really great understanding. I'm glad I was able to do that. Because now as we move forward for the 2017 open plans, you know, we can, you know, slightly enhance these different groups, and I can relate to these people. Hey, here's what players think. You know, here's what players would like to see done differently. Here's what they love what you're already doing. And it led to some healthy conversations, and hopefully we'll, you know, make the open even better for 2017.
What would players like to see differently? Give us some specifics. What kind of things were you hearing?
So I think years ago, tournaments were really concerned about players having a good time. You know, tournaments like Miami was really popular and really fun, and Indian Wells was the boring place that no one liked. When it comes to New York City, a lot of times people think, oh, we want to make sure the players have a great experience in Manhattan, that they see a show, that they can go to a nice dinner. To be honest, the mindset of the players changed. Guys are so concerned about their performance on the court that I think as a tournament, we need to be solely focused on that. How do we provide enough practice court time for them? How do we have a great gymnasium? How do we have good physiotherapists? How do we have the proper ice baths and recovery areas that players can take care of their on-court performance first and feel good about that? And everything else, I think, is secondary in the player's mind.
That's really interesting. I mean, it used to be the tournaments, you know, we had go-kart outing day and everyone got a PlayStation and we had, you know, dirt bikes on site for the players. You think the focus has now turned to much more of the professional amenities?
I think so. I think without the best food, without great recovery time, without proper preparation in terms of practice, players become really stressed. And that stress outweighs any sort of good feelings that you can win over by, you know, a fun outing. So I think we got to focus on those stressful areas first, and then the fun can come later.
What are your best tips for the players in terms of, I always feel like the Open is something that some players really warm to and they love being in Manhattan and they feed off the chaos, and other players never get used to it. And, you know, we were talking on Tennis Show, we were talking to Petra Kvitova, who just is very open about the fact that she can't really deal with New York and the Open. It's just too much, it's like sensory overload. What do you tell players about, what would you tell players about sort of how to make the U.S. Open more tolerable? I would say tolerable, but you know, how to take advantage of it.
No, I understand your point. It is a lot. And it not only is New York so intense with all that comes with it, but it's at the time of the year when you're starting to get a little bit fatigued. You know, we're 9 months into our calendar. Our summer season has flowed from the French to Wimbledon straight into a long U.S. hot, hard court season. So how do you kind of maintain your energy for New York? How I was best able to handle it was to actually get away from Manhattan, to stay in a hotel in Queens right near the site, to potentially even stay in, you know, Westchester if need be. For me, staying away from kind of the craziness of Manhattan while I'm competing, and then spend a couple days in proper New York City and enjoy that life once I'm finished. You know, that was my way of handling it, but everyone's wired differently. You said some people feed off it. Some people just can't wait to, you know, that day when they land in Manhattan and they walk around and feel the energy. But for other people, it's a lot of stress. So I think, to each their own, but I do think that the idea of grabbing a nice hotel right near the site, making your life really easy and convenient during the tournament, and then go out and have 3 days of fun in Manhattan once you're done.
Once the tournament's over.
Yes.
What do you think of that new grandstand court?
I thought they did an unbelievable job. I think players loved it. I think fans loved it. They built some shade. If you sit in the back corner, you get an unbelievable framed view of Arthur Ashe Arena. I think it's going to be a gem moving forward. Pre-U.S. Open, I heard so many complaints about the old grandstand coming down, And once the new grandstand was up and running, I didn't hear any more complaints.
They did
such a nice job with the court.
That's a really good point. That was a complete non-story. I mean, you thought there were going to be these ceremonies, and this would be tied into how populism has been trumped by revenue. You didn't hear that at all, did you?
But I also think that that's sort of the future of the U.S. Open. You know, when you think about tennis tournaments and how our calendar works, you know, Wimbledon is tradition. They're everything that's historic. The U.S. Open, you know, this is America. We're new. We're innovative. We're disruptive. You know, yes, we want to hold on to some gems, but hey, when the old Louis Armstrong becomes outdated and the court's not really a great playing surface anymore, let's get it out of there and let's build a new one. You know, that's, for me, I would love to see the U.S. Open be like a rock concert, like an NBA basketball game. You know, that when people come, they're coming to see a show that's got some tennis involved in it and the highest level of tennis, but it's a whole complete experience.
Sort of like a Phil Collins show with tennis tacked on.
You know, but I think that's catering to the New York night crowd. That's what they want to see. They want to see the greatest show on earth.
The speaking of disruption and innovation, I'm going to read you a quote. Tennis must consider shortening matches. Tennis must consider shortening matches in a bid to engage with a younger fan base and avoid losing television viewers, according to former ATP Player Council president and doubles specialist Eric Buderak. Do you support, defend, modify?
So, yeah, I think my Twitter went absolutely crazy that day because every, you know, tennis
I was going to say, yeah, I should point out, that was 2 weeks ago.
They started to speak their mind to me on Twitter, which is fine. I do think we need to look at that. I think that, you know, in this modern day and age, attention spans are shorter. If we want to engage with the youth population, which is really important for tennis moving forward, we do need to look at shortening matches. For me, as a tennis fan, I said this, you know, to Andy Murray in the locker room, I don't need to watch you play Novak Djokovic for 4.5 hours.
Right.
I'm quite happy watching you guys play for two.
Right.
For me, the drama of a Serena Williams Vinci semifinal in three sets
was as exciting as any
five-setter that I've ever watched. So I don't see the need for it personally. However, I don't think we should make radical changes with the U.S. Open just because I have an opinion. I think that we need to do some research. We need to understand what fans really want. And I've said this before too. I would love to hear from all fans. You can write me on Twitter at Buderak. Write me an email at Buderak@USTA.com and tell me what you guys want to see. Cause I do want to know, and I want to hear from everyone, especially the kids. You know, I want to know what they want to see for our sport as we move forward.
You think the way to, I'm 100% in agreement with you, and I would add that players' health would also benefit from shortening matches. But you think sets is the way to do it? I mean, you don't want to play four game sets,
no.
Or you don't want to do no ad scoring or no less. I mean, whatever. You think just chopping sets is the way to do it?
Well, I mean, that's so back to your players' health question. Absolutely, and you know, I think we said this when we saw each other in the Tennis Channel set that I want to see make sure that it's a tennis match with a huge athletic component to it and not an Ironman competition, which is sometimes what I feel like we're experienced here is like, who's the last man standing?
Right. Literally.
And I don't want it to turn into that. Literally. Yes. So this, I mean, I think as an excitement, yes. If you shorten every set to the fast four format, which Craig Tiley in Australia is such a big fan of, and I get that. That's now, however, a radical change for our sport as we talk about, you know, the people who are playing in parks and juniors playing tournaments. Just the whole world shift to four games. That's a huge change.
Do you really think? I mean, people have said that. Do you really think so?
But it doesn't mean that it's wrong.
But also, like, in the grand scheme of things, if you started telling me the dimensions were going to change or the net was going to get raised, but I've heard the same thing, and I'm thinking, you know, NBA added a line that changed the scoring, and a long shot now counted for 3 points. That's fairly radical. Is you really think that shortening sets to four games is that big a change?
I
mean, the rules haven't changed.
I guess compared to something like that, absolutely not. You're right.
I answer this question too, because I don't know if I should. I'll just say a friend who is a well-regarded former player, and I had a protracted debate about this. And he basically said, when the players start complaining, about the matches being too long and there being too many injuries, then I'll listen. But basically, as long as the players don't argue with the format and they're okay playing 4.5 hour matches and best of five, to me, it's a moot point basically until the players start voicing their displeasure. Why do you think given how prominent a role injuries have become, given the fact that nobody's saying anyone should take a wage hit, I mean, it would only help their economics. The prize money would stay the same, and they, in theory, would play more matches because they'd be healthier. Why haven't the players been more vocal about shortening basically their shifts?
That's a good question. I mean, first of all, I actually kind of disagree with that comment because I think in the business of sports entertainment, you know, we do cater to our fans. So as much as if players want a thing a certain way, we need to see what fans want to watch us do and find some happy meeting between those two. So I think that I disagree with that statement in the first place. However, you're right. Players do not complain that much about 3 out of 5. I think a lot of the top players have really built their games around physical fitness. People like Novak and Andy Murray, who are just absolute animals when it comes to fitness and their ability to win, you know, these long matches. But you're right, and I haven't heard much complaining. So I don't know that it is a huge issue with players, but I do think they would be surprised at how long their careers would be prolonged, you know, by extending this. You look at like doubles by shortening these matches a full 3 sets to a 2-set and a tiebreaker. Now we got Daniel Nestor at like age 44, still in the top 20. Like, I'm not so sure that Daniel could have done that in the full 3 sets format. So, I mean, if we want to keep Federer around, we want to keep Andy Murray around, we keep Novak and Rafa around for a long time, I think that they would be surprised how much longer they might last with a 2 out of 3 Grand Slam format.
Totally with you.
Who knows?
Well, I think part of this too is just, I think you raise a good point that look, if the players said, hey, listen, the ball should bounce twice, you don't just say, oh, sure, that's what the players want. I mean, they should be part of the discussion, but they shouldn't be the only part. But the other thing too is that if you look at any format, if you look at any context, the people at the top don't want to change anything, right? I mean, if your kid gets into Harvard, you're thrilled with their admissions process. If you're in the top 1%, you're thrilled with the tax code, or maybe not. But I mean, I think saying the top players don't want to change it is sort of it's almost circular. Of course they don't. Everything's going great for them. Why would they want a format change that might advantage the other players? Anyway,
go ahead. Yeah, let's move on.
No,
you're right.
Yeah, I was gonna say we could spend hours discussing this, but I'm totally with you. I mean, I think that. I think it's just crazy. I mean, I don't want to watch a 4.5 hour movie. I don't want to watch a 4.5 hour concert. It's just completely counter to the times. But anyway, all right, let's do a little role play. We're gonna mix things up. You and I are at a cocktail party, and I hear what you do, and I say, you know, I used to love tennis. We had McEnroe and Connors, but a lot of these guys now, I just can't get into the sport anymore. It kind of lost me. I get that all the time. I suspect you do too. What's your response when someone says that to you?
So I was at a cocktail party in Greenwich recently. Someone said that exact thing to me, and
that's redundant, by the way. Greenwich is a cocktail party.
I said you used to like McEnroe. I said, what do you think about Nick Kyrgios? And he said, he's a jerk. I said, well, what do you think McEnroe was back in the day? You know, there's these people that look back at John McEnroe's career with these rose-colored glasses and think that he was this, like, saint who then just threw these tirades, which were, like, enjoyable to watch. And it's like, whenever we do have someone who throws some bit of a tirade, people get so upset. So, first of all, yeah, I think social media has had a huge part of it, right? Now, if you do anything wrong, it's blasted over the internet. People have agents who are trying to keep them in line all the time. So there are less characters than there used to be. But when we do have one, people say they want it, but I'm not so sure that they do.
I would contend that we like Monfils. We like characters. Bernie Tomic would qualify as a character. I'm not sure what he does is appropriate. But no, I agree completely. And I don't know how much of this, too, is it an American thing? Is it the fact that everyone, you know, McEnroe grew up in New York and spent time at Stanford and you could always watch him in your time zone and he probably came to your community in a way that Nick Kyrgios is a bit less of a known quantity? But I find myself in that discussion all the time, and you sort of think back, and you like the sport when it was Connors, McEnroe, and Nastasi, but when it's Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Murray, it's lost you. I never quite know how to respond to that without being judgmental.
I think it's more of an American thing than it is, you know, even the craziness of McEnroe. So, like, I think if Francis Tiafoe went to number one in the world, you know, this guy's one of the more charismatic kids I've ever met.
Right.
He's got this unbelievable ear-to-ear smile. He's got this story where his father was the janitor of the, you know, Maryland Tennis, you know, Center, you know, and that's how he started tennis. Like, it's this unbelievable story. He's a great kid. Like, if that kid went to number one, I think tennis in America would blow up again. It's just more of that kind of grabbing on to someone that's, like, local as much as it is, like, McEnroe's craziness.
Good point. All right. Someone said I need to do more speed rounds, so I'm trying to include these. You ready for speed round?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Andy Roddick, Hall of Fame? Yes or no?
Absolutely. Yes.
It's an even game in the fourth set of a men's Grand Slam final. I call the trainer. Acceptable or line cross?
It's an even game. So, like,
hypothetically, let's say 3-1. Yeah, I'm going to say the opponent's about to serve. 3-1 in the.
I don't like it.
You don't like it.
Okay, this is tough. I mean, the speed round is tough. So, if someone has a visible injury that happens on the spot and you call the trainer, fine. When you have a lingering injury for, like, a multiple game, and then you decide to call the trainer before your opponent's about to serve, I don't love that.
There's a specific example I could cite, but I appreciate you're keeping this generic.
Yes.
Wild cards. How do you feel about the whole wild card game? Players whose ranking my ranking is insufficient to earn this spot. Eric Buderak has gotten in on his own merits, but I'm the local kid, and the promoter likes me. Buderak, you go to the quali draw. I'm going to get a main draw spot. You're okay with that?
I like it. Yep.
Tournaments need that that card to play, basically.
Yep. Tournaments need it. Players need it. I think it's good for the game. You don't want to have the draw filled with them, but I think we're at the right amount.
You mentioned the U.S. Open players.
I do not think that Juan Martín Del Potro should have had to qualify.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the right. I mean, that's the argument in favor. That would have been a great free session, though. what do we do? You mentioned the U.S. Open. The players are already. You mentioned that the players are tired coming into the U.S. Open. They've played a lot of tennis. It's the fourth major. That was almost a month ago, though. What do we do about the fall schedule? I mean, I think there's a sense, and we've seen, you know, we saw Serena hasn't played since the Open, and who knows if she's going to play again this year. Djokovic, if I were laying odds, I don't know if we'll see him before London. What do we do about this point in the schedule when there's points and prize money and markets and tournaments have made a commitment, but you just sort of understand the rhythms of the sport, and it's hard to get too jazzed about October tennis? What do we do about that?
I don't know, because we've also proven that if we take tennis away from people, for instance, when Adam Helfand, the CEO, shortened the ATP schedule by 2 weeks, which I thought was a great idea for player health,
right,
there were more special events like the IPTL created. Anytime players have a week off, their agents are out, you know, putting together an exhibition match in some foreign land to make some money. So at the end of the day, I feel like players are going to play. And so we may as well let them play on the ATP or WTA calendar.
Laver Cup. Possible Davis Cup alternative / replacement or IPTL European division?
Definitely will start off as the IPTL European division and has potential to push the Davis Cup to do something more radical because they don't seem to want to do it on their own.
Good answer. Are you allowed to talk about your former colleagues now? Give us your five favorite players to watch now that they're no longer active colleagues.
My five favorite players to watch. Off the top of my head. I mean, at the end of the day, you just want to watch your friends play. I mean, I'll watch Federer play any day of the week because it's just like you got this little moment of greatness that I feel like I'm going to look back in 30 years and tell my grandkids that I got to play while he played. On the women's game, I love watching Bethany Maddox-Sands. I love her doubles. I love the way she like competes and plays like a physical brand of tennis. In men's doubles, you know, ex-partner of mine, Julien Rogier, this guy's one of the most competitive guys I've ever seen. Like, I know that if I ever go watch him play, he'll be so intense. I'm drawn to these young Americans. I love watching TFO, Tommy Paul, Taylor Fritz, Riley Opelka. They're really good kids. I'm excited to watch them compete. Those are some highlights that, like, if I look at a Grand Slam draw, you know, when you're in the locker room and you're like, where should I go? Those would be some places that I might gravitate.
You mentioned women's tennis on your own. You mentioned young Americans on your own. You mentioned doubles on your own. No prodding. I think you are going to make this transition to office life just fine. That was a good political.
Well, I like a little bit of everything. I mean, it's
got a little Minnesota.
I've made a lot of friends on the women's tour. I really enjoy watching them play as well.
Doesn't Bethany Maddox-Sands undercut your claims to being the best player from Minnesota though?
She's actually from Rochester, Minnesota. My dad was her first tennis coach. So not only does she cut me in Minnesota, she cuts me into my hometown of population, 80,000 people.
No shit, I didn't know. Your dad taught her tennis? I did not know.
Yeah, he was her first tennis coach.
I did not know that.
And Marty Fish is from Minnesota, so I really got no shot anyway. So if you really dig into those Minnesota-born, I'm deep on the depth charts.
That's a good roster for something other than a tennis hotbed in terms of climate, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've hit our half hour mark. You're starting work on Monday. Best of luck with that. Seriously, they're lucky to have you. And it sounds like you've got a real plan of action. Let's check in again before the end of the year. We'll make you a 3-time guest, but I'm curious how everything from finding the parking spot to what happens when the vending machine eats your bill. It's like Dunder Mifflin. It's like Dunder Mifflin tennis version. But seriously, good luck with this new job, and that was fun. Let's do this again soon.
Honestly, I'm honored to be offered. I thought being a washed-up tennis player, people would forget about me quickly. So to get this phone call made my day. Thanks,
John. Stop. Glad you're still in the game. Watch that I-95 traffic, though. Give yourself an extra 10 minutes, especially your first day.
That sounds good.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Eric. That was fun.
Bye, John.
All right. That was Eric Buderak. As you could tell, one of the good guys in tennis. A pity he's no longer playing doubles on the ATP, but he'll remain in the sport, and the sport is lucky to have his presence. That'll do it for this week. That was a lot of fun. Again, did you catch Eric's email? I believe was that right, Jamie? Buderak@USTA.com. He wants to hear about what you think about tennis. He clearly is soliciting opinions from fans. I'd encourage you to be in touch with him either by email or Twitter. Twitter probably better, in fact, but we appreciated his visiting with us. That will do it for this week. Jamie Lasanti, as always, is our producer. Keep the suggestions coming. We have a number of guests lined up for the next few weeks, but we're always happy to hear from you. Feedback, constructive criticism. The audio quality may have been a little lacking. We apologize for that, but that's what happens when you use the Starbucks parking lot in Greenwich, Connecticut. Next week, we'll have a new guest. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm John Wertheim. That was Eric Buderak as our guest. Jamie Lasanti, as always, is our producer. Have a good week. We'll do it again in 7 days.